In the fall of 2015, Mary and I visited Israel-Palestine. I'll never forget the image that I have projected up here on the screen, and for those of you who are on Zoom, it's a picture, it's a mosaic of a church in Bethlehem overlooking the Mount of Olives. It's a mosaic of a hen seeking to gather her chicks under her wings. This church in near the Mount of Olives is called the Church of Dominus Flavit, which in Latin means Jesus wept. It's based on the gospel story in Matthew's gospel where Jesus is entering Jerusalem and looks up to the city from across the valley and breaks down in tears, weeping. I think Jesus weeps then for the same reason that Christ weeps now, when he sees Jerusalem and sees its division and violence. He provides this image in his reflections there amid his tears of wishing to gather the chicks under his wings, a very maternal, feminine image of desiring safety and well-being for all God's children, and expressing this deep grief that these children refuse to be gathered. The chapel that's built there is built with the architecture of a teardrop, again demonstrating that image of grief. I share this image for a couple of reasons this morning. The first is that it's a piece of art that was created as a mosaic. A mosaic is defined as, quote, decorative designs made by setting small colored pieces of stone or tile into a surface, or the process of art of making such pictures or designs, end quote. And as I began researching the idea or the beginnings of mosaics, it's a very ancient practice dating all the way back to the Sumerians, around 3000 BCE in Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq. Later, the Egyptians and the Greeks adapted the technique, and yet later, about the time of Jesus, the Romans made even more elaborate mosaic designs by cutting pieces of colored stone and glass into specific shapes to fit a larger pattern that they were making. There are many mosaics throughout the Middle East that have been preserved, and I'm sure many, many more that have been lost. But in a mosaic, the artists arrange pieces of cut and broken stone or tile to create this beautiful decorative pattern. And while we sometimes may struggle to grasp the overall design of a mosaic when we're looking at just individual pieces because they simply look like something broken and useless, but when we step back and get a picture of the whole, it becomes beautiful and lovely indeed, a wonderful finished masterpiece. It enables us to grasp the original design of the artist. I think that that's what we're looking at today as we think about the Anabaptist community. As we step back and look at the whole, we've already had a little bit of glimpse with its diversity and beauty. Recently, I read an interview with an environmentalist by the name of Terry Tempest Williams, who wrote the book Finding Beauty in a Broken World, and she writes, and I quote, "Shards of glass can cut and wound or magnify a vision. Mosaic celebrates brokenness and the beauty of being brought together again," end quote. This particular mosaic as Mosaic itself points to a reality, brokenness and pain, but also to the possibility, the vision of brokenness coming together to form something beautiful and whole. A vision yet for Jerusalem, for the Middle East, for Gaza, and magnified from that for the whole world. So I felt like it was fitting on this Anabaptist World Fellowship Sunday, where the creators, the Latin American siblings, chose the idea of a mosaic to think about the Anabaptist community. And I believe in that, to weep over the brokenness of our fellowship, a divided church that has so often lost its way. We seem to be like those baby chicks who would rather risk our own demise than to be gathered under the protective wing or of Christ. And it seems we so often shun the hard work of forgiveness and reconciliation. And we see so much of Christianity, especially in our country, which we know best, obviously, sliding over to the ever closer kind of modern day heresy of Christian nationalism. As many of you may remember, a few years ago, Franconia Mennonite Conference, of which we're a part, and Eastern District Mennonite Conference came together as one to form a new conference that was then named with a new name, which they came up with after a long process and many, many ideas of various names, with a name called Mosaic Mennonite Conference. This merger was an attempt and an expression of healing for a 175-year-old rift that had happened in the original Franconia Conference, around what we would now call something very insignificant and even silly. In describing this new conference when it was formed in 2020, Steve Criss, our executive conference minister, says, and I quote, "To me, mosaic means taking the pieces of who we are, the brokenness, our uniquenesses, our textures, our different sets of cultural expression, and thinking about how those things are creating a new piece of art out of our history, out of our own senses of identity, and putting something new and beautiful together, and taking that brokenness and being transformed into God's people with our commitment to being missional, formational, and intercultural. This is not just for us, not just for our neighborhood, but for the whole world," Steve writes. And if you look at Mosaic Mennonite Conference today, it's radically different than it was a few years ago. And it's safe to say that we are becoming a mosaic. We are living into our new name, at least in our cultural and racial diversity. Now I think speaking, what, 6 or 7 different languages. However, we have growing pains, I think it's safe to say. Some of our most white and conservative congregations have severed ties with Mosaic Conference, and we've had trouble agreeing on what a faithful Christ-like mosaic should look like. Just how much diversity is acceptable? Our conference is in its second year of what we are calling the Pathways process, engaging with a consulting firm and holding countless meetings with delegates, with congregations, with staff, with pastors, in order to discern our relationship, specifically with each other and more specifically yet with Mennonite Church USA, which for many we have a significant lover's quarrel, we might say. We are well aware already of the fracturing within our own denomination, along with many other denominations in our world. And I believe that Jesus would shed tears over the ease at which we sever those ties with those whom we disagree. But I have a bit of good news to report this week. You may recall that last year, about this time, Deep Run East Mennonite Church chose not to worship with us or participate with us in our traditional Ash Wednesday service that we had been holding for many years with them and with Blooming Glen Mennonite and us. Last year, they made their decision based upon our response to welcome our LGBTQ siblings. Well, the good news is that this year, Pastor Brent from Deep Run East and Michael and I are sitting down this coming Wednesday to talk about that service and to plan it. And I'm very curious to hear from Pastor Brent of the change of heart of Deep Run East, or at least the pastoral leadership there. Perhaps we can be a beautiful and broken mosaic after all. Our gospel text chosen for us this morning that you heard read by our brother in Paraguay in the German language from the Gospel of John, chapter 10, is part of a sermon that in itself is a bit of a mosaic. I'm borrowing from the writing of a young Anabaptist leader, Martia Perez, from Paraguay as well. So many of these ideas are her ideas. In reflecting on this John 10 text, she ponders how we can become a part of this people of God. And she particularly highlights this text in which Jesus says, and John writes of Jesus, that he says there are sheep that are of other folds that are of my flock as well. How is it possible to be part of the people of God? And she says, this is precisely what the gospel is about. The good news that tells us that through Christ, all are welcome to be a part of the people of God. God calls and invites us to respond, and we come from different parts of the world, from different cultures and customs and ideas and languages. But with Christ, we can be brought into one body, into one fold, to keep the analogy going here from John. And Christ becomes our guide, our shepherd, who goes before us and leads us to God. She said, Jesus, our shepherd, is good and kind, and this is experienced by all, transmitting confidence to the people of Christ that Christ loves everyone equally. The sheep are known and become part of his flock. And of course, the shepherd expects and invites the sheep to know the shepherd as well. And he welcomes other sheep too. The shepherd not only takes care of the sheep that are already in the fold, he keeps inviting other sheep to where he wants this large mosaic of sheep. The people of God are the flock who follow Jesus, the Good Shepherd, as their guide. All people of God follow Jesus by getting to know him and forming the people, and thus are one people within God's flock. I'm not going to take time to exegete the second text that we heard from Ephesians chapter 4, but it's obvious that in that text, the Apostle Paul is pleading for the early church to form a kind of community that would be unified, that would find beauty within its great diversity that makes unity so difficult in the first place. I do want to conclude this mosaic of a sermon with a bit of reflection on the significance of this specific weekend. Not only are we honoring Anabaptist World Fellowship, but we are also experiencing Martin Luther King Jr. Day tomorrow and weekend this week. Since 1986, it has become a national holiday. And mostly, when we think about Martin Luther King Day, we often think and hear a few quotes from Dr. King. Most often, I think the famous "I Have a Dream" speech. And I think children tend to learn in school, and we tend to learn in our society, that Dr. King was a unifier, one who wanted to bring all people together, all children of not just black and brown, but of all colors. And advocated, obviously, for racial equality and unity. And that Dr. King was indeed a very nice man. But I've come to understand that this popular notion, this narrative we have, is rather a domestication of Dr. King. And sometimes we memorialize prophets as a way to smooth out their rough edges and to make us feel a little less comfortable by their radicality. I think it perhaps is another subtle move of racism. Because Dr. King, in reality, had a knack for confronting oppressive powers and making enemies. He made many enemies in his lifetime. He was critical of racial segregation in the Jim Crow South and the subject of hatred for segregationist politicians and white mobs. He also was an enemy of the rich for fighting for jobs, for low pay wages for workers. He was at a strike in Memphis for garbage workers, the lowest of the low working family, when he was assassinated. Dr. King was an outspoken critic of the Vietnam War and militarism. Yes, King made many enemies because he tirelessly made the nation uncomfortable in the pursuit of justice. And it's well documented through King's sermons and books that he experienced much personal anger, and he regularly called himself discontented and expressed his anger both at the powers of government and the church. His greatest disappointment and anger was most apparent with the white church and its leadership in the South. And much of his frustration with the white church came from its lack of support during the Birmingham boycotts. King had hoped for a white church that would come alongside him in solidarity and love. And instead, what he experienced was rebuke and scolding for spending so much time in jail. And he was asked to wait. Freedom will come, but you must be patient and wait. It angered Dr. King that white Christians were turning a blind eye toward the injustice of their black neighbors, many of whom were also Christians. In King's famous letters to the Birmingham jail, King implored these white church leaders to see social issues as integrated concerns for the gospel. I think when I grew up, I heard much rebuke of Dr. King about this idea of a social gospel as something antithetical to the real gospel. So we remind ourselves on this Global Anabaptist World Sunday and MLK Day weekend that we are a global family and that we are called to be united amid our diversity. But we also are called, I think, to hold in tension this call to be united, but also to continue to be prophetic. Even within the church, even when it means that other churches might turn against us, So let's not smooth out the rough edges of Dr. King's prophetic voice, nor the prophetic and rough edges of our Anabaptist forebears, or the prophetic edges of our own voice and our own prophetic witness. May their holy discontent invite us and challenge us and challenge the status quo and seek transformation through Christ, who brings together this broken and beautiful mosaic that here at PMC we like to call the kingdom of God. So today, as a sign of the mosaic of our worldwide body and Christ's body, we will participate together in the Eucharist, the Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving to God for the Lord's table, the Lord's Supper, for what we call sometimes Holy Communion. And as we will sing, this is God's table, not ours. So regardless of your age, gender, orientation, or anything else, you may think disqualifies you from coming to this table, please hear the good news that you are welcome to come and participate. All the chicks are called to come home under the wings of this cosmic Christ. All the broken and rough edges of the mosaic are brought together at this table. Thanks be to God. But first, let's express our faith in song, joining our voices to the voices of the last gathering of our Mennonite World Conference family in 2022 in Indonesia, when we will join them in singing about what true evangelical faith means. And please understand evangelical here as good news, not evangelical with a big capital E, but evangelical with a small E, which really should be the big E, because that's the real good news.